Okay, welcome back. I see a lot of videos, I'm sure you do too, and I'm seeing more and more that I have no doubt that the host or hostess is AI. It's a digital version of somebody. I won't say it's an AI individual, it's a clone. It's like what Julia McCoy did to herself. She cloned herself, and now Doc McCoy, Dr. McCoy, Dr. Julia McCoy, her digital avatar does most of her videos. You can't tell the difference. I saw another one today, and this guy, and you know how you can tell now, and it's very difficult otherwise. The individual doesn't look quite human. He or she is perfect. Perfect. And when they go through the process of digitizing themselves or making a digital avatar of themselves, they have to be in really good mood, upbeat, perfect makeup, perfect hair, and they have to give a sample. I don't know how many minutes, 4 or 5 minutes or something like that, where most of the time they read. And the imagery is all captured and then it's put in the computer. But these people, these digital versions of people, are just too perfect. Watch and you'll see. They can change the background anytime they want, all of it. Now, let's go back to the beginning of this hour. And the beginning is, I'm going to play two videos with I don't know what his name is. He's the Asian guy with glasses, brown hair. Hair is parted on our left, his right. He's extremely compelling. Whoever does the writing for him is very good. It may be AI writing in point of fact, but this guy is something you just can't dismiss easily. He's got it down. Whoever put him together as an AI source pulled it off flawlessly. All right, now, the first video we're going to listen to tonight is entitled Quantum Just Killed AI Data Centers. And I earlier tonight mentioned to Vincent Finelli that AI data centers, when they become quantum AI, will allegedly use only about 10% of the energy, water, and power that the current AI data centers are supposedly going to require. So that's in a year or less in somebody's estimation. I would say 1 to 2 years. But data centers will not be the enormous energy parasites when quantum steps up to the plate as quantum AI. It's going to change. That said, I do believe that the AI data centers are going to be used for far more than what they're admitting right now. And that's why they're being built. It's not that these people are stupid, these big tech giants, and they're building all these data centers, and they don't see what's coming. And what's coming is quantum AI with about 10% of the usage needed. They're not that dumb. They get it. There's something else in the works. Okay? All right. Here's the Asian guy. I don't have a name for him, but he does a lot of videos about the Iran war. He also does videos about advanced AI. So here's another one. This has 260,000 views already. It's about a week old. So let's listen. You'll hear right away how compelling his speech cadence is, how well he speaks perfectly, grammatically correctly. The syllables are all there. You can almost hear the syllables in the words. But here he is. You know who he is. I'm sure most all of you have seen him before. So let's take a listen as he tells us about quantum just killed AI data centers. Did it? Let's hear what he says.
Imagine waking up one morning and finding out that the single biggest tech investment in human history, over $1 trillion being poured into massive AI data centers right now, could all become completely worthless. Not in 50 years, not 20, but possibly within this decade. That is not a nightmare scenario from a sci-fi movie. That is the very real conversation happening right now inside the most powerful tech companies on the planet. And the thing responsible for all of this disruption is not another AI model. It is not a new chip. It is not even a new software breakthrough. It is quantum computing.
Remember what I told you about this guy in the very beginning? He was the first one to use that cadence. It's not this. It's not that. It's not even that. It is blank. That was the setup. Now, more and more people are conversationally using that. It's not this. It's not that. It is this. And they hit you with it. That's an AI construct. But he does it very well, and he was the first I ever noticed to use it as a conversational tool. And he does. All right, so he just told us that these data centers are going to be basically garbage because of quantum AI. I don't think that's the case. I do think that at the rate of technological advancement, the amount of hardware needed to store the amount of data in these data centers is going to make the amount of space needed for such storage far less. If you need, let's say, a 400-yard by 400-yard building, that in a few years is going to be 200 yards by 200 yards because of the advancement in technological memory. New chips. So that may be an issue. We'll see. All right, so let's back that up just a drop for you, and I won't try and interrupt so often, but this is pretty good.
Tech companies on the planet. And the thing responsible for all of this disruption is not another AI model. It is not a new chip. It is not even a new software breakthrough.
See, there's the setup and the delivery. It's very, very clever. And more people are trying to incorporate that into their normal human cadence of speech. Here, listen to it again.
Responsible for all of this disruption is not another AI model. It is not a new chip. It is not even a new software breakthrough. It is quantum computing, a technology so fundamentally different from everything we have ever built that scientists are struggling to even find the right words to describe it. And right now, in 2026, quantum computing is beginning to do something nobody fully expected this soon. It is starting to kill the AI data center industry as we know it. To understand why this is such a massive deal, you first need to understand just how insane the AI data center boom has become. We are not talking about a few server rooms getting upgraded. We are talking about one of the most expensive infrastructure build-out S in the history of civilization. In 2025 alone, the world spent an estimated $580 billion on AI-focused data center infrastructure. That number is almost impossible to wrap your head around. Microsoft committed over $80 billion in capital expenditures just for fiscal year 2026. Meta is projected to spend between $80 billion and $100 billion in 2026, up from $70 billion the year before.
Okay, are these people stupid? Do they not understand? Can they not project where AI and compute is going in the next 4, 5, 6 years? Of course they can't. These are being built for reasons that are not being fully disclosed. Or we're faced with the potential that we have to consider that these people are dumb as rocks. They're not. They're building these for reasons, multiple reasons.
Google, Amazon, and every major hyperscaler on Earth is racing to build the biggest, most powerful AI computing facilities money can buy. And if you think that money is just staying inside the tech industry, think again. U.S. utilities alone are planning $1.4 trillion in spending to supply power to these data centers. Electricity prices for regular America and families have already risen nearly 40% since 2021, largely because of this demand. And some estimates say consumers could end up paying $700 billion of that $1.4 trillion total through rate hikes. If you're sitting at home wondering why your electricity bill keeps climbing, now you know why. If that does not shock you, hit that like and subscribe button right now, because what comes next will. The AI data center energy problem is not just an economic issue. It is becoming a full-blown crisis. The International Energy Agency now projects that global data center electricity consumption will exceed 1,000 terawatt hours by the end of 2026. To put that in perspective, that is the equivalent of Japan's entire annual electricity usage, consumed just by data centers. The World Economic Forum has projected that data center energy use will double between 2024 and 2027 alone. Some estimates suggest AI-driven data centers now consume more electricity than entire nations. In Ireland, data centers already account for 21% of the country's total electricity consumption. By 2026, that number is forecast to hit 32%. In the United States, Bloom Energy estimates that total data center energy demand will nearly double from 80 gigawatts in 2025 to 150 gigawatts by 2028. And here's the part that nobody is talking about loudly enough. This explosive demand is crashing into a power grid that simply cannot keep up. Projects that secured land and financing years ago are sitting completely stalled, waiting for grid interconnection queues that stretch 3 to 7 years in major utility territories. Data center cancellations due to local community pushback actually quadrupled in 2025, with at least 25 major projects canceled outright. Maine became the first U.S. state to pass a full moratorium on large data center construction. The AI industry built itself a monster, and now that monster is eating the power grid alive. So what does any of this have to do with quantum computing? Everything. Because here is the fundamental problem with how AI works today. Every single AI model you use, every ChatGPT conversation, every image generated, every video rendered by artificial intelligence, requires classical computing power. Classical computers, even the most advanced ones, work by processing bits. Every bit is either a zero or a one. Simple, reliable, but brutally energy hungry at the scale that modern AI demands.
Is this guy good? He's slick. Whoever put this together, he's really very interesting to listen to, no matter what he's talking about. They got it right with this one. And everybody's trying to come up with the right voice, the right inflection, the right cadences. This one dialed it in. This is interesting. I like communication, and this guy got my attention early on. He's good.
Training a single large AI model can consume as much electricity as 5 average American homes use in their entire lifetime. Running that model after training, what engineers call inference, happens billions of times per day across the internet, consuming staggering amounts of power continuously, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, every single day of the year. The entire AI data center empire exists because classical computing is the only tool we have had to do this job. But quantum computing does not play by the same rules, and that changes everything. Quantum computers do not use bits, they use qubits. And qubits can exist in a state of zero, one, or both simultaneously, a phenomenon called superposition. On top of that, qubits can be entangled with each other, meaning the state of one qubit can instantly influence another, no matter the distance. These two properties together allow quantum computers to process an almost incomprehensible number of possibilities at the same time, rather than sequencing through them one by one the way classical computers do. The practical implication of this is mind-bending. A UBS analyst report published in early 2026 described how the industry is approaching a quantum computer that could solve a problem in just 200 seconds, a problem that would take a conventional supercomputer 10,000 years.
I think that's really very important. This is what quantum, and just a couple of years ago, I would suggest that 90% of the people in this profession said quantum may be 10 or 20 years away. They didn't believe it. It all of a sudden is here. It kept getting better, kept helping to make itself better, and now it's knocking at the door. It's going to take over. It will be quantum AI. Let's listen to that little part again. That's very important.
The way classical computers do. The practical implication of this is mind-bending. A UBS analyst report published in early 2026 described how the industry is approaching a quantum computer that could solve a problem in just 200 seconds, a problem that would take a conventional supercomputer 10,000 years. Read that again. 200 seconds versus 10,000 years. That is not a small improvement. That is not an upgrade. That is a completely different category of machine. And yes, if that blew your mind, go ahead and like and subscribe. Because the implications of that single data point are about to reshape every AI investment on the planet. Now here is where the quantum and AI data center story collide in a way that should terrify anyone who has bet billions of dollars on traditional computing infrastructure. In 2026, the three biggest names in quantum computing, Google, IBM, and Microsoft, have each crossed into territory that was considered theoretical just 2 years ago. Google announced its Quantum Echoes algorithm breakthrough, demonstrating the first verifiable quantum advantage with its Willow chip running a specific algorithm 13,000 times faster than classical supercomputers. IBM has unveiled quantum processors pushing past 1,000 qubits. Microsoft has made serious progress with its topological qubit architecture, which promises natural error resistance without the complex correction systems that have slowed quantum progress for years. And Microsoft's Majorana 1 chip built on...
Did you notice that? Quantum progress for years. Should have been quantum progress for years. Quantum progress for years. That's AI. They still haven't gotten it completely stable, at least in this case. Those are just little things that we still have left to grab onto and try to note that something is or is not artificial.
Systems that have slowed quantum progress for years. And Microsoft's Majorana 1 chip, built on a breakthrough class of materials called a topoconductor, represents what experts are calling a transformative leap toward practical quantum computing. These are not press releases. These are engineering milestones. The race is no longer theoretical. It is happening right now in real labs with real hardware producing real results. The specific threat quantum computing poses to AI data centers comes down to efficiency in a way that cannot be overstated. Right now, the majority of what AI data centers actually do is optimization, finding the best solution among billions of possible options. Training a neural network is an optimization problem. Running recommendations, fraud detection, drug discovery simulations, logistics calculations, all optimization. And optimization is exactly the category of problem where quantum computing achieves its most dramatic advantages. Quantum annealing systems and hybrid quantum classical architectures are already beginning to handle optimization tasks that would take classical supercomputers days or weeks, and solving them in minutes or hours. When quantum computers can routinely handle these workloads at scale, the need for hundreds of thousands of classical GPU servers, the machines that fill today's AI data centers, drops dramatically. Not to zero, but dramatically. The energy equation flips. The infrastructure equation flips. And the trillion-dollar investment sitting in those massive classical computing facilities starts to look very, very different. It is also critical to understand that this does not require quantum computers to fully replace classical computing overnight. The disruption happens long before that. The moment a credible timeline for practical quantum advantage becomes clear, and many experts now believe that timeline is between 2028 and 2030 for fault-tolerant, commercially viable quantum systems, the economics of continuing to build classical AI data centers begin to break. Why would a company spend $5 billion building a new classical GPU data center in 2026 if credible? Quantum hardware will be commercially available by 2029 or 2030. The investment calculus shifts, capital flows shift, and the companies that have already sunk billions into classical infrastructure face an increasingly difficult question about the long-term value of those assets. Google's Sundar Pichai has publicly stated that the company is optimistic that practical quantum workloads will emerge within 5 years. That is not a vague, futuristic statement. That is a CEO telling the market to start preparing. The energy dimension of this story cannot be left behind, because it is perhaps the single most powerful driver of quantum computing's rise. Classical AI data centers do not just use electricity, they devour it. And the quantum alternative is radically more efficient per unit of useful computation. Quantum processors themselves consume relatively little energy during actual computation. The energy-intensive part of quantum systems is the cryogenic cooling required to keep qubits at temperatures close to absolute zero, colder than outer space. But here's the critical difference. One quantum processor performing millions of calculations simultaneously uses a fraction of the energy that hundreds of thousands of classical processors would need to attempt the same calculation sequentially. As a 2025 analysis from Medium's Codex publication put it, the most realistic promise of quantum computing is not to eliminate data centers entirely, but to dramatically reduce the energy and physical footprint per unit of AI work performed. That is...
Sequentially. Simultaneously. Two different words, very important. Traditional computing is a sequential process. Quantum computing is a simultaneous process. I hope that helps.
A revolution in efficiency, not just a new piece of hardware. And in a world where AI energy demand is projected to equal Japan's entire national electricity consumption this year alone, that efficiency revolution is not a nice to have. It is an existential necessity. If that scale of impact is not worth your subscription, nothing is. So go ahead and hit that like and subscribe button. The geopolitical dimension of this story is equally staggering and equally underreported. McKinsey's 2025. Quantum Outlook tracked over $36 billion in public and private investment flowing into quantum technology. S&P Global reports that global investment in quantum technology has already surpassed $55 billion in 2025 alone. Governments across the United States, China, Europe, South Korea, and Japan are treating quantum computing as a matter of national security, not just industrial competitiveness. The race to achieve quantum supremacy is not just about who gets to sell the better computer. It is about who controls the next generation of encryption, military logistics optimization, pharmaceutical discovery, financial modeling, and artificial intelligence infrastructure. The country or company that achieves fault-tolerant quantum computing first will have an advantage over classical computing rivals that is comparable to the advantage a modern fighter jet has over a World War I biplane. And the nations that have built their entire digital economies on classical AI data center infrastructure will face a painful and expensive transition if they miss the quantum window. There's also a darker side to the quantum story that deserves serious attention, one that has nothing to do with efficiency and everything to do with security. Quantum computers, as they become more powerful, pose an existential threat to the encryption standards that protect every piece of data inside every AI data center on Earth. Current encryption methods, the digital locks that protect bank transactions, government secrets, corporate data, and personal information, are based on mathematical problems that are practically impossible for classical computers to solve in reasonable time. Quantum computers will be able to crack many of these encryption systems with relative ease. This is not a distant hypothetical. The cybersecurity community has a name for it, Q-Day, the moment when a quantum computer becomes powerful enough to break standard encryption. Data banks, government agencies, and major enterprises are now being told that quantum-safe protocols will be essential in enterprise data centers by 2030. ISO and other international standards bodies are already developing the Quantum Computing Security Framework, ISO IEC 23837, to address this challenge. The data centers that are being built today will need to be rebuilt, or at minimum fundamentally retrofitted, to survive in a post-quantum security environment. That is another layer of cost, another layer of disruption. Another reason why the AI data center model, as it exists today, is running on borrowed time. What makes this story especially fascinating is the disagreement at the very top of the technology industry about how fast all of this is actually moving. At CES 2025, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang famously said that practical quantum computers are still 15 to 30 years away from being truly useful, and that classical computing, especially GPU-accelerated AI systems, would remain dominant for the foreseeable future. His comments immediately sent quantum computing stocks crashing. But less than a year later, the same companies that Huang was dismissing had delivered breakthrough after breakthrough that directly contradicted his timeline. Microsoft's Majorana chip, Google's Quantum Echoes algorithm, IBM's 1,000-qubit processor, Quantinuum's H2 processor achieving quantum volume 33.5 million. These are not incremental updates. These are category-defining moments. And by 2026, even the most skeptical voices in the industry have been forced to acknowledge that the quantum timeline is compressing far faster than the conventional wisdom suggested. The 2025 quantum computing market revenue was already projected at $2.5 billion, with fault-tolerant quantum systems expected from multiple vendors between 2028 and 2030. Here is what this all means for the future in practical terms. The AI data center industry is not going to collapse overnight. Classical computers are not disappearing next Tuesday. But the architecture of the future, what computing actually looks like in 2030 and beyond, is not going to be 10,000 GPU data centers consuming more electricity than Japan. It is going to be a hybrid world. Quantum processors will handle the most complex optimization and simulation tasks. Classical systems will handle data storage, simpler inference workloads, and the vast majority of everyday operations. But the center of gravity is shifting. The companies and governments that understand this shift and begin positioning for it now will be the ones that win the next decade.
Okay, I'm going to stop right there and move on to another video. So I hope that was helpful. I think it was very well stated. Should be quite an illumination to a lot of people who didn't know much about quantum. I hope it helps. It's all changing, friends, so fast, so rapidly. It's boggling the mind. Okay, here's another one. I don't know this particular... Another Jewish fellow, find a position of power, authority, influence, and they're going to be there every time. Paul J. Lipsky. Okay, and he's good, but it's just amazing to me how many times it's almost always a Jewish person, an expert, an authority, whether self-appointed or hailed unanimity. It's crazy. So here's Paul Libsky talking about AI notebook LM update, Gemini study notebooks, Claude Design 2.0, and ChatGPT. Don't forget, you're going to be using ChatGPT probably a lot less as the shift toward, according to Sammy the Altman, to an absolute agent for everyone takes over. That's where we're going. You name your agent, you can have it talk to you, you can have it use print, doesn't matter, text. It's going to be wild. All right, here we go.
So it's a small update, but it's really nice, and it was long needed. Next, let's talk about what's been going on with Anthropic. We'll start with an update on Fable and Mythos. Anthropic has been very quiet about what's happening with these models ever since they removed access to them a few weeks ago. For those of you who may not know, the US government told Anthropic they had to effectively cut off access to their latest model, Fable, to the entire world. Anthropic has been working with the US government trying to get it back ever since. Rumor has it the negotiations are going better now that the CEO has stepped back from negotiations and they've replaced him with the co-founder, Tom Brown. So nothing definitive yet, but it does appear we are moving in the right direction.
So he's saying that Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei has moved back, moved himself off the center. I didn't know this. I'm hearing it now.
And hopefully we'll be able to access Fable again very soon.
We need to publicly apologize to everyone
who... Okay, so he's saying that Fable is coming back. If you remember, I think it was Dario who said that. He couldn't say when, but he didn't discount the fact that it was going to come back. There's more proof.
That the mobile version of Claude Cowork is going to get much better. I'm a huge fan of Claude Cowork. If you follow my channel, you know that. This is an app you download onto your computer. It's a Claude desktop app, and it includes Cowork, which can access local files and folders on your computer. The problem is, if it's running on your computer, you don't have access to Cowork from your phone. So they invented this thing called Dispatch. This has been out for a few months now. It's a way to access the Claude Cowork that's running on your computer. But the way it exists right now isn't great, to be honest, because it's one long conversation. It makes it very difficult to multitask with Claude Cowork. The rumor is that's going to get better. So I don't know exactly what this is going to look like, but I would imagine that you'd actually be able to see every single task that is running and assign it different tasks.
Claude Cowork, one word, Cowork.
Instead of just having this one long conversation. So I'll definitely keep my eyes on that. And if there is an update to the mobile version, I'll be releasing a video about it. So stay tuned for that. What's not a rumor, though, is Claude Tag. This is a new way for teams to interact with and use Claude directly inside of Slack. So basically, you are creating a Claude account for your team inside of Slack. So you can message Claude directly inside of Slack without having to open up a different app, and it will start executing on the tasks while you focus on other things. So we can see an example of that right here, where Nadia asked Claude to schedule something out for her, and then it goes and does that. Now, I'm not the ideal candidate for this because I don't use Slack. I don't have a team. It's really just me. But what I can say is this feels like we're moving away from using AI in dedicated apps and starting to use them where we already work. Google has been doing this for a couple of months now with Gemini in Google Chat for Teams. And I think businesses are going to start doing this a lot more, both big teams and small teams.
Okay, I'm going to pause right there. Thank you, Mr. Lipsky, for that. We will see what happens next. Here's a good one. This is kind of a follow-up. It's the same Asian guy. I don't know what to call him. He's back with another one here. This one, 15,000 views in just less than a day. Might be good. Last week, the U.S. government. Let's see what he's going to talk about, the government forcing Claude 5 and Fable 5 to be removed. That'll be part of it. So let's see where he goes.
Last week, the U.S. government forced the most powerful AI model on the planet, Anthropic's Claude Fable 5, completely offline for everyone, even people outside America. And within 24 hours, a Chinese company dropped a free AI model that can go toe-to-toe with it. You can download it, run it on your own laptop. And nobody, no government, no company, can shut it off or ban you from using it. But here's the part that makes this week genuinely wild. That's not even the biggest story. Anthropic, the maker of Claude, just got hit with a lawsuit. A customer figured out that the usage limits he was paying $200 a month for were nowhere close to what was advertised. He burned through 15% of his entire weekly limit in a single session. And he's trying to turn it into a class action that could include anyone who ever bought the plan. And then there's Midjourney, the company famous for those gorgeous AI images. They just did something nobody saw coming. They built a body scanner, actual hardware. You float in a pool of warm water while sound waves scan your entire body. I'll explain why an AI art company is suddenly in healthcare, and it'll genuinely surprise you. That's three stories. I've got 10 total, the ones that actually matter, not the filler. And at the very end, I'm going to show you a real head-to-head test, that free Chinese model versus the banned Fable 5, and Claude Opus 4.8, building actual websites and a playable game. The result is closer than you'd ever expect.
Is this guy slick or what? It's not just me. He's slick. He makes the points. He moves right along. There's no slowness. There's no hesitation. He just nails it. Boom, boom, boom. So I've always found him to be quite an effective communicator.
Let's start with the big one. A Chinese company called ZAI released a model called GLM 5.2, and it's a genuine earthquake. Here's why it matters. Most top AI models from OpenAI, Anthropic, Google are locked behind their companies. You can rent access, but you don't own them. They can change the price, change the rules, or cut you off entirely. We literally just watched that happen when the US forced Fable 5 offline. GLM 5.2 is the opposite. It's a 744 billion parameter frontier model with a million token context window, completely free under an MIT license. And it launched on June 13th, 2026, the exact same day the U.S. government cracked down on Claude Fable 5. That timing was not an accident. And this is not some weak, free alternative. The benchmarks are stunning. According to artificial analysis, GLM 5.2 is the best open-weight model in the world right now, with an intelligence index score of 51, beating DeepSeek V4 Pro and Minimax at 44. On real coding tasks, it goes head-to-head with the giants. On SWE Bench Pro, GLM 5.2 scored 62.1, decisively beating GPT 5.5 at 58.6. On Frontier SWE, it hit 74.4%, surpassing GPT 5.5, and finishing in a near tie with Claude Opus 4.8 at 75.1. And here's the kicker. On the crowdsourced Design Arena benchmark, GLM 5.2 took first place, beating even the now-banned Claude Fable 5. The community reaction tells you everything. Pretty much everyone respected in the AI world praised the model after using it. One prominent analyst said, such a clear focal point of discussion around an open model has only happened once before, DeepSeek R1, and that GLM 5.2 has well exceeded that DeepSeek moment. Fast.ai co-founder Jeremy Howard said that for his use, he found GLM 5.2 at least as good as Opus 4.8 and GPT 5.5. And the price is the knockout punch. GLM 5.2's API runs 1.4 per million input tokens and $4.40 output. Claude Opus 4.8 is $5.25. GPT 5.5 is $5.30. That's roughly 1/6 the cost. Now, I promised you honesty. So here's the part most hype channels skip. On the hardest tasks, GLM 5.2 still trails Claude Opus 4.8 in most head-to-head comparisons. 81.0 to 85.0 on terminal bench. And behind on the deepest reasoning over very large code bases, there's an efficiency catch. It burns roughly 43,000 output tokens per task, more than its rivals. So some of that low price gets eaten back in volume. It's not the outright best. But for a free model you can own forever, it's astonishing. I'll show you exactly how it performs at the end of this video. Now, the story that affects you most directly, even if you never...
I got to tell you again, if you listen carefully, with AI voices, they're very clear. I can't speak as clear. I can, but I can't speak as clearly, as quickly, with the cadence that this guy has. I can hear every syllable almost in every word. It's perfect. That's an interesting thing. I find that to be very rarely experienced. All right, here we go. This is another one of his 10 stories, I guess.
Even if you never touch a Chinese AI model. Anthropic got hit with a lawsuit. A customer named Carl Kahn signed up for the Max plans, the ones marketed as 5X and 20X, the usage of the regular Pro plan, at up to $200 a month. But according to his lawsuit, the real limits were nowhere near what was advertised. His claim, a single five-hour session burned through about 15% of his entire weekly limit. For a $200 plan, that's roughly 3 days of real use before you hit the wall. He filed in California and wants it certified as a class action, meaning anyone who bought a Max plan since launch could potentially join. Anthropic declined to comment. Now, here's why this matters far beyond one company. And there's a fascinating twist, because Anthropic isn't the only one with this exact problem. Remember GLM 5.2, the free Chinese model I just praised? An AI engineer who goes by Day7Tech tested ZAI's own coding app under a pro plan that claims to be 15x Claude code. In a single task session, he said the usage was exhausted in less than an hour, and he claimed the app displayed fewer than 2 million tokens used. But his account was billed approximately 60 million tokens. He said the lack of transparency goes against everything people expect from the values of open source models. So this is an industry-wide problem. Every AI company runs on these fuzzy, confusing usage caps that almost nobody fully understands before they pay. You buy a plan thinking you know what you're getting, and then you hit an invisible wall. That's exactly why this lawsuit could matter to all of us. If it succeeds, it could force these companies to tell you clearly and upfront exactly how much usage you're actually buying before you hand over your money. That's a win for every single person who's ever been confused by an AI subscription, which is basically everyone. Now for the one that made me do a double take. Midjourney, yes, the company that makes those jaw-dropping AI images, just announced it's getting into healthcare. It's called Midjourney Medical, and they're building actual hardware, the Midjourney scanner. Here's the concept. You step onto a platform, it lowers you into a shallow pool of warm water, and a ring of thousands of tiny sensors scans your entire body using sound waves. No giant magnets, no claustrophobic tube like an MRI, just floating in warm water. But why on earth is an AI image company building a body scanner? The founder's answer is fascinating. Making AI images earns them so much money that it funds these wild moonshot bets. And his real, stated goal was never just pictures, it's improving human health. And the experience they're designing sounds more like a luxury spa than a hospital. They're opening a location in San Francisco with saunas, cold plunges, and scanning rooms. The dream is a 60-second scan that costs a few dollars, with 50,000 of these machines worldwide eventually. Now, the honest reality check.
Well, what do you get with a 60-second scan? I guess a full readout, full body scan, full body readout. He didn't say. Let's see if he does.
Because this is the responsible part. Right now, this is still a prototype. It needs FDA approval, which is a long and serious process. And a single scan currently takes about 20 minutes, not the 60 seconds they're dreaming of. So this is a bold vision, not a product you can book next week. But I love it as a signal of where things are heading. When AI companies become so profitable that they start funding radical attempts to reinvent medical imaging, that's the kind of moonshot that occasionally changes the world. And we'll see if this one delivers. This next one tells you just how insane the war for AI talent has become. One of the actual founding fathers of modern AI just left Google for OpenAI. His name is Noam Shazir. And to understand why this is a big deal, you need to know who he is. Back in 2017, Shazir was one of the authors of a research paper called Attention is All You Need. That paper invented the core idea, the transformer, that basically every major AI today is built on. ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, all of them. So founding father isn't an exaggeration. He left Google to start his own company. And in 2024, Google paid around $2.7 billion, yes, billion, to bring him back and put him in charge of Gemini, their top AI. Now, less than 2 years later, he's walking out the door and straight into OpenAI, Google's biggest rival. OpenAI made him lead of architecture research, essentially putting him in charge of designing how their future models are built from the ground up. Sit with that. Google spent $2.7 billion to win this one person back. And he just joined the other team. That's how fierce this fight has gotten. The smartest people in the field are now worth more than entire companies, and everyone is trying to poach them from everyone else. When individual humans command 9- and 10-figure deals, you understand why these companies are burning so much cash. The talent itself has become the scarcest resource in tech.
Okay, we're going to pause there. That was called China's Free AI Just Embarrassed Claude. I still think Claude should have been called Claudius as the Roman emperor. That would have been, I think, classier. But whatever. Who am I to say? Okay, now here's one. This is odd. It's McCoy again. Doc McCoy. It's about Schrodinger's cat. It's a famous thought experiment designed by physicist Erwin Schrodinger in 1935 to illustrate the bizarre nature of quantum superposition. It imagines a cat trapped in a box where its life or death depends on a random subatomic event, forcing the cat to exist as simultaneously alive and dead until the box is opened. That's pretty wild. Now, let's see what this said. This is Julia McCoy again, Doc McCoy. Title of this one is Schrodinger's Cat Just Got Real and Scientists Cannot Explain It. I want to hear this. We don't have a lot of time, so let's jump right in.
Everyone has heard of Schrodinger's cat, a cat in a box, somehow alive and dead at the same time. Until someone opens the box and looks. It's the most famous idea in all of quantum physics, and for 90 years it came with a comforting catch. It was just a thought experiment, a metaphor, because everyone knew the real rule that quantum weirdness, being in two places at once, only happens to the tiniest things. Single atoms, lone electrons, never anything you could actually see, never anything solid. In early 2026, a team in Vienna broke that rule. They put a solid object in two places at the same time, the largest object ever shown to obey the strangest law in physics. Schrodinger's cat just stopped being a metaphor and started being an experiment. The experiment came out of the University of Vienna, working with the University of Duisburg-Essen, published in Nature in 2026, led by a doctoral student named Sebastian Pedalino. They took clusters of sodium atoms, about 7,000 atoms each, roughly 8 nanometers wide. They fired a laser to fix each cluster's position to an accuracy of about 10 nanometers. And that same laser placed each one into a superposition, meaning it could follow more than one path through the apparatus at the same time. When those possible paths overlapped later, they produced a striped interference pattern. And that striped pattern is the fingerprint. It is the unmistakable signature that the object did not take one path. It spread across a region dozens of times larger than the particle itself, the total mass, more than 170,000 atomic mass units, heavier than many proteins, in the range of a small virus. Let me say that again because I want it to land. A speck of solid metal as massive as a small virus was demonstrably in more than one place at once. Not light, not a single atom, real solid metal, the kind you could hold in your hand. Here's the comparison that
by location, that's what she's saying,
shows how far we've come. In 2019, the record for this kind of experiment was a molecule of about 2,000 atoms, weighing around 25,000 atomic mass units. This Vienna result is roughly an order of magnitude beyond that by the measure physicists actually use, called macroscopicity. In physics, that is not a step. That is a leap across a chasm everyone assumed couldn't be crossed. And here's the part the lead author said out loud, which I love for its honesty. Intuitively, you'd expect a lump of metal that big to behave like a normal classical object sitting in one place, like everything you've ever touched. It didn't. It behaved by the rules of the quantum world. Here's the three-part pattern I want you to see, because it's bigger than any one experiment. First, there is no proven size limit on quantum mechanics. We always assumed the quantum rules switch off once things get big enough to see. This experiment says, we have no evidence of a hard line. We just keep pushing the boundary outward and quantum behavior keeps holding. As Pedalino put it, quantum mechanics itself doesn't state any limits. And that's exactly what they're testing.
This is crazy. Pedalino, whoever he is on to something. If there's no limits on the upside to the size of physical properties that quantum is using, and apparently bilocating. Well, think about that. No longer sub-nano. We're talking about any size, potentially. I don't know where it could end.
Second, the reason we don't see this in daily life has a name: decoherence. When an object touches its environment...
This clever mask was invented in...
All right, hold on. Here we go. Whoops. Okay.
Definite
reaction. Back it up just a drop. All right.
Heat other particles. The superposition collapses into a single definite reality almost instantly. That's why your coffee cup is in one place. Not because big things can't be quantum, because big things can't stay isolated. The everyday solidity of the world may be less a law and more a side effect of everything constantly bumping into everything else. Third, and this is where every person who has ever wondered about meaning should sit up straight. This experiment drags the deepest question in physics back into the open. What makes reality settle into one definite thing? When does the haze of possibility become the outcome? Some physicists say it's the act of measurement, some say it's observation, and some, looking at this very result, wonder whether the possibilities don't collapse at all, but...
What makes reality? Observation? Measurement? Mass agreement? That's pretty wild stuff. Here, let's check that again and proceed.
What makes reality settle into one definite thing? When does the haze of possibility become the outcome? Some physicists say it's the act of measurement, some say it's observation, and some, looking at this very result, wonder whether the possibilities don't collapse at all, but branch into a multiverse of every outcome at once. Now, here's where I have to be careful. More careful than usual, because I want to be honest about what we know and what we don't. The experiment is solid. The superposition is real, peer-reviewed, published in Nature. That part is not in question, but what it means, that's where physicists genuinely disagree. And I won't pretend there's a consensus where there isn't. Whether reality needs an observer, whether consciousness plays any role at all, whether there's a multiverse. These are competing interpretations, not settled facts. Anyone who tells you this experiment proves the universe needs a conscious mind to exist is reaching past the evidence. So let me hold this honestly. The data is rock solid. The meaning is a wide open, beautiful, unfinished question. And here's what I think is true anyway. So let me bring this down to what it touches. For technology, this is the kind of work that feeds into more sensitive quantum sensors and tests the outer limits of quantum theory itself. The team is already working on putting biological matter through the same setup, which would push quantum interference into a whole new regime. For physics, this is a direct experiment probe of the border between the quantum and the classical, the question Schrödinger himself was pointing at with that cat. We are finally testing it instead of just arguing about it. For philosophy, the comfortable wall between the strange quantum basement and our solid, dependable world is cracking. Those were supposed to be two different realities. They may be one reality, separated only by scale and isolation. And for faith and meaning, here is the quiet wonder. The solidity you trust, the floor under your feet, the certainty that a thing is in one place may be a gift of relationship. Rather than a brute fact, a thing becomes definite when it stops being alone, when it touches the world around it. There's something almost scriptural in that shape. That definite reality emerges through connection.
Okay, I have to stop there. That's probably leaving most of us in the dust, but quantum is enormous. And if you remember, just a year ago, we weren't talking much about quantum at all. And now it's dominant. And it's going to be everything they've said and more. I don't even think we fully understand the potential we're talking about here. Multiverse? The gift of relationship? Wow. Okay, lots to think about for sure. Hope you enjoyed that. It's always fun to explore this astounding explosion into a whole nother realm of existence, AI. All right, have a good one, take good care, and we'll be back Monday. In the meantime, the network will continue, as it always does, to bring you the best. Talk soon. Take care.